to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen podcast, and today I'm interviewing Tom Evans. Now Tom is a UK author, book writer and poet who mentors other authors how to unleash the books inside themselves. He also specialises in removing writer's block and helping authors connect with their creative muse, which is what we're going to talk about today. So welcome Tom.
Hi Joanna, good afternoon.
Yes, great to have you here. So can you just start off by telling us a bit about you and about your background?
Well, I'm a serial entrepreneur and inventor, and I've always had light bulb moments all my life. And I've been researching recently where they come from. And I've been looking into the human mind and how we operate. And as a result of that, I've discovered not only where they come, but what stops them coming in, hence the interest in writer's block.
Yeah, that's great. And can you tell us, you've written a couple of books, haven't you? Just maybe explain a bit about your publishing and writing background.
Yeah, the first book I wrote by accident, and this is what got me into this. I was on a plane flying off on holiday, and all of a sudden I had this idea to write a book. And by the time I got off the plane, I'd written the whole book. And it's a book called 100 Years of Ermyntrude, written in poetry, written in rhyme. And it's based on a book by Gabriel Garcia Marquez called 100 Years of Solitude. But I thought it'd be great to write a book like that about birth, life and death, but that people could read on the internet in about 15 minutes. And it basically came in out of nowhere. And I've spent the last 3 years researching where it came from and being able to teach other people how to do the same.
Wow, that's amazing. And people can presumably find that online as well, because I haven't read that one of yours. Can you tell me where it is?
Well, it's available from a website, www.100yearsofermintrude.com. That's the printed version. But I'm just about to re-release it. I wrote it in 2005. And would you believe that every four-line stanza, which comprises each page of the book, is less than 140 characters?
Ah.
So guess where I'm going to republish it?
On Twitter.
You've got it, yeah. So I'm going to republish it over the next week or so on Twitter, so people can follow 100 Years of Ermyntrude for free. And the Twitter moniker is going to be Trudy100.
I'll put that on the podcast. But we're here today and we're going to talk about writer's block. So can you tell me, what is your definition of writer's block?
Well, blocks come in at about three levels. It's like an onion. You know, you take one level off and you have another level. The basic level is that life just gets in the way and things conspire against you setting out your best intention to write a book. That's sort of level one. And there's loads of really practical ways around that sort of block. The second level of block is where your creative muse runs dry. And again, I use techniques like whole brain thinking, whole mind thinking, mind maps, and even some physical exercises and the things that you eat and drink to get you around that sort of block. The third level of block is one where you've got some sort of trauma. Tends to be something that might have happened in early life, in your early days, between maybe 0 and 10 years old. I've even found blocks that have happened in the womb. And for some people, I don't know whether you believe in this sort of thing. I've even trained as a past life progressor. I don't do this very often, but I don't know whether past life as a model is something, whether if it's true or not, but it doesn't matter if people think it is, and it resolves blocks. So blocks that like this tend to be traumatic. They can be fear of failure, fear of ridicule, and even fear of success stopping people getting on and writing.
That's really interesting. I'm just thinking about myself there. And, you know, when you talk about fear of failure, I think that that is, you know, everybody has that. And for authors, especially, you know, submitting their books to publishers and being rejected means that you have to face fear of failure all the time.
Yeah. And of course, the real upside of this is that there's no such thing as failure, because from every block, the main message is that there's a great life learning to be had. And if you take that failure and take it into it and see how it can be used constructively, and you learn to love your blocks, then amazing things start to happen. I mean, I've been running Fear of Success for about a couple of years.
Some people say that blocks aren't real, that they're actually just things that people make up to serve as an excuse, I guess, for not actually writing. What would you say to that?
I'd say, yeah, I mean, if people can be, you know, you're in a creative process, and it's amazing how creative you can be about not getting on with the process. So typically, you know, we might get onto Twitter and spend half an hour there, or be answering our emails, or the kids might want something from us, and we say that we really have to do something for somebody else. And if it wasn't for somebody else, we'd get on with the process of being creative. When what we're doing, we're actually being creative about not being creative. And this can go on for a long, long time. Believe me, I've been there.
So how do you tell the difference between a real block and procrastination?
Okay, well, you can see it in, I ask a few questions of somebody, and you can tell pretty much straight away by people's language what is running inside their head. So our words say much about us, and also our if I'm doing a one-to-one session with someone, their body language and their posture will tell me where the block is. So, for example, if someone sort of meets me and says, and they're late, so people come to the meeting and they're a little bit late, that tells me they've got a time management problem. I'm not angry about that. It just gives me a clue as to where the issue is with the block. If somebody comes and they've got bits of scraps of paper everywhere about their book, you know, it's pretty disorganized, that gives me a clue that their desk is going to be disorganized. And when people come and you can see that they're either holding their neck or their chest, or they're moving their hands around to protect themselves, that means there's a deep-seated fear that we've got to clear. And of course, you can get any mix of those.
And I guess those are things that you can tell as someone who's an expert in this area. If people are listening and, you know, they actually think that they are blocked, are there signs that they can tell about themselves, I guess?
Sure. There's a really easy test, actually. If you were to just maybe close your eyes and go inside yourself and think about where the thoughts to do with either your blockage or your book are coming from. If they're coming from your neck or your chest or your gut, then it tells you that there's a blockage somewhere in the system. If you find that your head is just buzzing with thoughts, that just tells you that there's that it's a thinking process, it's a cognitive process to do with procrastination or management and this sort of stuff. But you could just, if you just go inside, you just close your eyes and just sense where you think the block is coming from, I guarantee that your first instinct will be correct.
No, that's really interesting. And I had another thought then while you were talking. Some people say that they want to be a writer and, you know, they desperately want to write, but they don't have any ideas. Is that a blockage?
Yeah, that latter blockage that I discussed, where you've got lots of internal dialogue going on. You're continually thinking, or perhaps you're just thinking about the outcome, about you know, being a millionaire and retiring on the back of your book. Then that's a blockage which you can deal with by. I teach everybody very simple visualization and meditative techniques, about the best tool that any writer can have. Going for a walk is even a fantastic thing to do. If you haven't got a dog, get a dog and go walking daily. I guarantee that works for writers. But certainly not having the ideas is a continual block. But by quieting the mind, you'd be amazed how ideas start to come in.
That's brilliant advice. And I've actually read your book, which is called Blocks. And mm-hmm. in that book, you do talk about a lot of these things. But you also say that blocks are to be welcomed and embraced. And you also mentioned that there would be a life learning to be had. So can you explain a bit about how blocks can actually help people?
Yeah, if you think about, I use a lot of models, and one of the models I use, I don't know whether this is true or not, and I don't want to discuss necessarily here whether it is true, but I use the model of reincarnation, the idea that every time we come back, we evolve, we learn things, and we move on. Now, I'm never going to be able to prove this. I don't make a big thing out of it at all, but it just helps you as a model think about the world in maybe a slightly different way, and it certainly helps you as an author understand a little bit more about your path through life. So if you see a block not as a barrier, but a challenge and an opportunity to learn and grow, it's amazing how that block transforms. And what happens is even sometimes just understanding a block like that is enough for it to dissipate. And then you might get another block, another block, another block, but they all sort of vaporize once you understand that they're there for a reason. But there's a great collateral benefit as well. And so many people that I've been working with, this has happened to them. As they write their book, the blocks that come up as great source material so they can understand the next chapter and the next chapter. And people start to manifest what they're writing about in their lives as real events. And it just gives them a huge, deep vein of source material. Quite magical.
And that's interesting because I guess some people say that if you have a block, you should just ignore it and sit down at your computer and just get on with it, you know, stop, you know, get over yourself. But what you're saying is that people should focus on those blocks. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say focus on them. I'd say just, it might sound a bit, I don't know, namby-pamby or something, but just learn to love your blocks and, you know, learn to embrace them and understand what they're there for. And when something's not going right, you know, before when we started this interview and I started to say something and then the audio quality broke up, What I understood straight away is that I was actually saying the wrong thing and perhaps I needed to start introducing myself in a different way. And that's a good example of learning to understand your blocks and things that happen not only inside you but externally as well, understanding that they're there for a reason. And as soon as you tune into them, things start to go incredibly well for you.
And
that
now,
makes sense?
Yes, no, that does make sense. And I guess I'm, you know, now you're making me think. I'm just thinking about something about myself, for example. So I guess I've written three nonfiction books now, and I, you know, I have a blog and I do a lot of writing, and I'm quite confident in that. But I feel like I can't write fiction. You know, that's kind of in my head as something I can't do. And maybe there's other people who are listening who might feel that way, or maybe they write fiction, but they feel I can't get a publisher. Now, are those examples of blocks or are they not blocks? You know what I mean? I guess I'm trying to get to how people can deal with what they're feeling.
Okay, well, let's deal with them in reverse order. There's a sort of perceptual side of this, and there's also a reality side of things. And it's traditionally more difficult to get fiction published because you've got to go through that hoop of getting a literary agent and what have you. And it's a longer time. I think it can be longer to write fiction, certainly if you're writing it in longhand and narrative, not in my shorthand and poetry version that I put 100 Years of Ermentrude out in. So there's that perceived block, but as you know, there's so many ways now of getting your books published. So either through the various ebook aggregator sites like Scribd or Smashwords or my ebook, and there's also a lot of the big publishing companies now are launching initiatives like Authonomy, where you can submit your fictional work to a community site, and the ones that get the best reviews by the readers go up to the top and get commissioned by the editors. In fact, they launched Autonomy. This is HarperCollins. They launched Autonomy in October last year. And in January this year, the first three authors had their commissions for publication in summer 2009. So that old paradigm of fiction taking ages to get published is pretty much disappearing at the moment. So then there's the internal thing about writing fiction. Now, I don't know, have you got any children? Have you ever told stories to children at night and nieces and nephews?
No, I don't.
I don't have children either, but have you ever made things up?
Yes, I mean, yeah, and I think I could, but I think I could write it, but I'm just not doing it.
Okay, so basically, yeah, so first, the big thing you've got to do, there's two things you need when you're going to write fiction. You want to make a point, so you're going to say, well, what, this fiction isn't just some yarn I'm going to spin out. It's gonna make a point that's going to make a difference. So you've got what I call meta constructs behind the book, things that you want to get over. And also, you've got something that you want to get through yourself, so you've got a personal motivation to get the book written. Now, that could just be a sense of pride, or it might be, for example, I'm halfway through, or more than halfway through, a book called Soul Wave, which explains high-level concepts on cosmology, evolution, consciousness to people. And I could write a scientific book about that, but it'd take me a long time to do research and to back everything up, so I'm finding it a lot easier just to write the whole thing as a story. And as a metaphor, what happens, not only does it allow you to be completely creative, but you can also get points across to people at an unconscious level, which has a much deeper resonance, you know, like books like Who Moved My Cheese and that sort of thing, and the E-Myth, all written in that sort of style, allow you to get very deep concepts over at a very simple level.
That's fascinating. Must stop talking about me. And, you know, but I think a lot of people listening will have similar issues to, I guess, what I'm talking about, and what you're saying, you know, resonates with me. So it's very valuable. But I want to talk about a course that you have, which is called Unleash the Book Inside, which I think, you know, many people would love to do that, but they have a lot of problems doing it. So maybe you could just talk a bit about what you do on that course. I know it's a live course, but, you know, are there some concepts that you can give to people listening that will help them unleash the book that's inside them?
Sure. Well, actually, it's available online as a home study course as well, so you can take it anywhere in the world over an internet connection. It's about 2 hours of narration, loads of interactive mind map exercises, and 4 amazing MP3 visualizations that take you off into those states of consciousness that allow creativity to flow. And what we do on the two, there's a 2-day version of it, which I'm just about to expand to a 3-day version, is that we get people into a state where you're slightly entranced, and you also write in trance. So, you know, you've ever read a Dan Brown book where, you know, I don't know what you think about Dan Brown, but he's certainly a successful. And if you read one of his books on holiday, you turn one chapter, and then you've got to read another chapter, another chapter, another chapter. And what he's done is get you entranced. And what I do is I teach people how to write books that entrance readers. And obviously one of the ways to do that is to be in trance yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you're in the deep hypnosis and about to perform some silly act on stage. What it means is, you know that time when you're so creative that in an hour you seem to get about 4 hours work done and time just disappears? Well, that's a state that you can get into with conscious volition. You don't have to, it's not a random state. In the same way that having light bulb moments isn't something that's random, you can actually induce them on demand by getting into this slightly trance-like state. And that's what I teach on the workshop. And it's the most fabulous couple of days. I enjoy them thoroughly as well.
So tell me a bit more about those light bulb moments on demand, because I think people would be very keen to experience them. Can people actually do that themselves?
Yeah, there's the online course. I teach the techniques to have them. Some of the exercises in the book blocks is going to help with that as well. And you know when you have them is because they, you know, those times when you have a thought that seems to be less than a second. Yet you get a whole vision. I don't know whether you got that for Author 2.0, but all of a sudden the whole thing just comes in, and then it takes you an hour or two to jot everything down. Well, those states are ones that aren't random and that you can induce. And what you have to do is understand, first off, why they don't happen, and then you can start to understand how to make them happen. And I do all my whole writing day working like that. It's amazing what comes out from the whole process. Things you really didn't expect.
No, it's interesting you say that. And I guess sharing that, you mentioned Author 2.0 there, and that was an idea that I guess came to me a few months ago, and I just, you know, had the whole idea all at once. But obviously then it took me about 3 months to actually create everything that went around that. So is it a case of acting on these flash ideas that might come to you. And if you don't act on them, they disappear.
Yeah, if I use another model, this is a slightly esoteric model, but it's one that's been around in human consciousness for many years, is the idea of this collective consciousness. It's something that Carl Jung postulated, and it's a feature of many Eastern traditions, the idea that we have a collective mind. And what's happening is that current scientific thinking is going that way, that we haven't just got three dimensions, we've got multiple dimensions. Either the debate is out whether it's 10, 11 or 26 dimensions. But in these dimensions is wrapped up what's called an information field or an Akashic field. There's a fantastic book on this by a guy called Irvin Laszlo, a very well-renowned scientist. And another lady called Lynn McTaggart wrote a book called The Field. That's another book worth reading. And the idea is that we have a field of consciousness that we're all tapped into. And this consciousness sits outside space and time. And so if you think about it, what the way I describe it is that if that sits outside space and time, there's a version of Joanna and Tom in the future that's also tapped into it. And through morphic resonance, which is a concept by a chap called Rupert Sheldrake, you tap into the future you that knows the words you haven't written yet, and you get them sent back to the present. Now, again, it might sound like a bit of a strange concept, but when you think like this, and a great friend of mine has got a phrase, he says, it only has to be true enough, which I think is a lovely phrase. And if you think about these things in such a way that they only have to be true enough, it's amazing how they start to happen. So imagine that it was Joanna in a year's time, really successful millionaire that's been selling Author 2.0 for a year, and you tapped into her ideas and tuned them back into the present, and then it took you 3 months to get them out there. And you could only evolve to being the millionaire-ess Joanna in the future if you listen to those ideas now. And how many times have you had an idea, not acted upon it, only to see someone else do it 6 or 9 months later?
No, that's that's very interesting. And what about, I guess, if people have had these ideas and then they haven't acted on them, can they, you know, will those ideas come again, different ideas? Can people don't have to give up, do they, if they didn't act on one of those ideas?
What tends to happen if it's a cracking idea is you'll get reminded about it again 2 or 3 times. And if you then don't act upon it after 2 or 3 times, then it goes back into the collective consciousness. And I like to think that it's free for someone else to tap into then. So you'll be reminded of it. So, for example, with Author 2.0, you may have seen someone else doing something 2.0 or saw the word Web 2.0 more often than you might have done before, and that's just a reminder. Or you might have seen car number plates with the number 2 on it or something like that. You know, you see strange things that remind you of the things that you should be doing.
No, it's fascinating, and I'm just wondering how people are feeling, because we're having quite a spiritual conversation, which is quite unlike most of the podcasts I'm doing. So I'm going to ask you a few more, I guess, more practical sided questions, because I know that everything you do is not just, you know, around the spiritual side. You also do a lot of technical stuff. So you are also a professional mind map trainer. And I mean, this kind of, and you also use this iMind Map software. So could you explain a bit about that and how authors can use that as a tool?
Yeah, mind maps are brilliant, because you've heard of that model of the brain where we've got a left hemisphere and a right hemisphere. And that the left hemisphere is the logical controlling hemisphere, and the right hemisphere is the creative hemisphere. And you've also probably heard this phrase that we use about 2 or 3% of our brains. Well, what mind maps do is allow the two hemispheres to work in harmony. And a mind map is something, because it's a map, the left hemisphere says to the right hemisphere, leave this to me. I do the maps in this partnership. I'll deal with the structure. And while the left brain is busy doing the structure, the right brain sneaks in and can be fantastically creative. So that's one aspect of mind maps, where the two brain halves work together. The other aspect is that mind maps map into your neurology so that you remember them and you notice coincidences. So once the map is in there, you start to notice all the things that are going to help you with your book. And that might be source material, it might be ideas, or it might be just bumping into just the most perfect literary agent or publisher or illustrator that's going to help you get the book into print.
And can you just explain, I guess, try and draw a picture in people's heads as to what a mind map looks like?
Yeah, so imagine a central image. So what I say to people when we're starting out on the course, I say, well, just draw an image in the center of the bit of paper, an A3 bit of paper, that represents your book, what your book means to you. And then draw some branches, some lines off of that image, radiating out maybe three or four lines, one going to top right, one going to bottom right, one going to bottom left, one going to top left. And what you say is, on the top right one, just what is that book going to do for you? How is it going to transform you? How is it going to transform the world? In terms of the bottom right, you'd say, what would be the biggest benefit that you would get from writing this book? So what's the biggest learning? What's the maybe the biggest financial benefit? Down to the bottom left, draw what would be great to clear from your life as a result of writing this book. So what maybe bad habits you want to break? What things you want to get out of your life? And up in the top left, you might say, what would the other learnings be for you that you get from writing this book? And that would be an example of a great mind map to start out your process of writing.
And people can put words on it and pictures and whatever they want, basically. There's no rules, really, are there?
Absolutely. And when you get more sophisticated with mind maps, you can do more than that. You can put audio notes on it, so you can record sections of your book on a branch. You can hyperlink to research. You can even bring in RSS feeds of research or Google searches in onto branches. So your mind map becomes a living document by which you manage the whole book production process.
Now, that's interesting, because I've done mind maps for years, but I just draw them in my diary, you know, in my my by hand. And I generally use words and little arrows and things. But what you're saying is using software to do it.
Yeah, I don't use on the course, for example, I use pen and paper, as you're saying, because it actually activates slightly different sections of the brain. Mm. And sometimes putting a computer in front of somebody will force them back into left brain mode, which is the last thing you want to do as a creative. So I only advocate using a mind map in that mode when you're into the production of your book, not in the inception of the book. But yeah, there's a couple of programs I use. I use iMindMap, which is Tony Buzan's software, and also Mind Manager, which is a fantastic bit of software as well. So, and iMindMap is just coming out on the iPhone pretty soon, which is even better. So,
well, there you go. And what I want to, I guess, you know, pull out for people as well is how you're moving from talking about super consciousness and, you know, creativity and things into using software. You know, and you can meld those two, can't you? You can be a creative and you can also get excited about what the internet and software and iPhones are all about for being an author.
Yeah, and I see them both as exploration. Is that since I was a child, if something occurred in my life that I thought is interesting, how did that work? I felt compelled to research it. You know, so when I was a kid, I thought that transistor radios were magic, so I used to take them apart, see how they worked. Then I went and did a degree in electronics to find out how they worked. Then I used to design electronic components and circuitry and make the magic happen myself. And later on in life, I just find that the mind is the most amazing tool. And if you just learn a little bit about it, and no matter how weird and wacky that might sound, but just be open and embrace these ideas. And if you experience something, you know, don't shy away from it, but just embrace it and go with it. And I just think from an author's perspective, you'd be a fool, especially if some of the ideas that are coming to you are coming from the you in the future that you've not evolved into yet, to ignore them. Even though that's a wacky idea, you'd be foolish to ignore. You'd be foolish to ignore messages from the future, wouldn't you, if they were true?
Absolutely. And so maybe just tell us a bit about your techie side. You do a lot with ebooks and social media. Can you give a few tips to authors as to what they might be using?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that, you know, when you write a book, I don't think you should be prescriptive about how people should read it. So obviously, it's lovely to pick up a printed book and leaf through the pages. But more and more people now are reading and consuming things online or on their phones or in their cars on CDs. So, for example, I'll give you an example of 100 Years of Ermyntrude. It actually started life as a PDF. Then it became an audio book. Then I did a video version of it. There's a program in the UK used to be on for children called Jackanory, where an actor would sit on the chair and read out a book. And I got this lovely lady to read out Ermyntrude as if it's a children's story, which sounds wonderful. Then it became a printed book, and now it's about to become a Twittered book. You know, so it's got about four or five different incarnations, and different people using different media can get access to it. And I know on your Author 2.0 program, the first module has just got some even more fantastic ideas about how you can get a book out nowadays, which I'm absolutely enthralled about, and got me really thinking about other ways of doing things. So I think get a book out to as many people as possible. And early on in the book's production process, you know, be pretty wild and creative about how it's going to get out to the market.
No, that's excellent. And you mentioned iPhones there briefly, and I think I read somewhere you're considering an iPhone app as well. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I'm going to do the second book in the series. The next book after Blocks is going to be called Unleash, and that's going to be how you unleash a book inside you using mind maps. Now, that could be paper-based mind maps, but it can also be software-based mind maps. And everybody that comes on my course gets access to the software templates that I use. So I'm going to use that book. It'll come out as a printed book, but it'll also come out as an iPhone book with the software and with the templates, so you can go and create your book on the move, which I think is just going to be fantastic.
No, that does sound really interesting, and I'm particularly looking at iPhone apps at the moment as a new form of technology that we haven't really got a handle on yet, I think, as authors. You know, at the moment people are just trying to put a book on the iPhone, which is quite boring. There's got to be something else, hasn't there? And what you're saying sounds quite cross-media.
Oh, yeah, and so at the moment, if I look at my online course at the moment, it's great, but you've got to then go and... you're going to use the generate the maps yourself on paper. But imagine if you could read the theory or listen to the theory on the iPhone, and then actually create the map on the phone itself. So you're actually using the same device. I think that would be phenomenal.
Absolutely. It's brilliant. And I love the fact that you're kind of taking ancient ideas about consciousness and talking about iPhone apps. I think that's that's great. It's embracing all parts of you, isn't it?
It is, and I've never been more creative in my life, and I've been having more fun. So something's got to be right about it.
And that's exactly right. And I think maybe we should just before we almost finish, we're out of time. Maybe just talk about that fun, because I guess, you know, the subject of this podcast was writer's block, and for a lot of people that has nothing to do with fun. So can you just, I guess, finish by synthesizing those two things?
Yeah, because I'm a great believer. I think a book is the best business card you'll ever have, and that doesn't matter. It doesn't mean if it's a non-fiction book you've written about your domain expertise, or whether it's a fiction book. It opens doors for you that you just really wouldn't have imagined. I had no idea when I wrote 100 Years of Ermyntrude it was going to end up with me walking around London in a bra with 15,000 women for 26 miles at night. That just wasn't on my career path, and I didn't know that was then going to lead to me becoming not a writer's coach, but a writer's unblocker, and somebody that could help people tap into creative ideas. And there's a few things on the horizon now. And this is all because I wrote a short book of poetry about a woman's life, a lady who lived to 100 a couple of 3 years ago. And this has been just a ticket that's taken me around the world to places I wouldn't have expected, situations I wouldn't have expected. Because I've been open to the ideas that have come in. And I was slightly worried when I first started doing this that opening up the floodgates would be a bit of a problem, but it hasn't done that. It's just opened up opportunity after opportunity. And it's just fun. I don't call it working. I'm meeting some fantastic people. I'm working with some fantastic people, having this great conversation with somebody I wouldn't have met if I'd not got on Twitter.
Yes, and it's great that we met on Twitter, and, you know, I'm a real fan, I know you are. So we've got to finish now, but can you just tell people how they can find out more about you and about your books?
Okay, well, I've got a website, a blog site called The Book Write. That's like playwright, so it's BOOKWRIGHT.com. I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/TheBookWrite. And pretty much everything you need to know about the work I'm doing, the books, the courses, and the inspirations that I've got coming in are going to be published on there. In fact, Twitter's my inspiration channel.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Tom. That was brilliant.
And thank you, Joanne. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.